Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey strangers, I ran this episode in October of 2024. I'm running it again because it feels timely, and sometimes I like to say I told you so. I got a lot of positive feedback from this episode. I also got a lot of people who were very angry, including one woman who emailed me to say, "What if I called you a Nazi? How would you like it?" The answer to that question is I would be confused. There is nothing I've done in my life that would qualify me as a Nazi. I'm relatively certain that if allowed the room to continue, once ICE has run out of black and brown people to disappear, I could well be on the list of the next group they start rounding up. But if calling me a Nazi is what you need to do to feel better, go for it, I guess. I would argue that things are even worse than I predicted when this episode first aired. As I speak, communities across the country are putting their lives on the line for their neighbors as 2025 proved to be ICE's deadliest year in over two decades, leaving 32 people dead and 6 to 8 more just in the start of 2026 alone. Trump's nationwide crackdown on immigration has reached a truly dangerous fever pitch in the first year of his second term. More have died in his modern-day concentration camps known as immigration prisons, with a record high of 73,000 people detained right now. Of that overwhelming number, according to internal data from the Department of Homeland Security, only 47% of those detained have criminal records. The rest are simply classified as, quote, immigration violators. And if not fitting the nationality of one leader's liking is considered a violation, then the dots should be pretty easy to connect back to this topic, stranger. Fascism has arrived as it has time and time again. And with that said, let's roll the tape back, popping in when appropriate with updates. Are we stuck in some kind of loop? How can it be that every few generations, another leader comes along saying the same things, somehow winning hearts and minds, only to then be revealed to the masses as a despotic monster? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I'm an atheist Jew who tends to bristle when people compare modern-day politicians to Hitler. Call me a snowflake, but I just think there are less sensationalist comparisons we can make than to a man who is responsible for the brutal genocide of millions upon millions of innocent people. Though I will also admit that when I visited the Holocaust Museum in D.C. during the 2016 election, I was particularly struck reading quotes of Hitler saying Germany first. Even I had to admit it sounded an awful lot like something one of the candidates for U.S. president was saying about America. But come on, let's be real. It's a preposterous comparison, right? Right? Over the past 8 years, there have been enough troubling statements and enough people comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler that I finally decided that rather than have a knee-jerk reaction to it, I would actually do some research and comparison and figure it out for myself. I should start by saying that I'm going to do my best to only include verifiable facts, not take things out of context, and generally try to keep emotion out of this. If I veer off the path of dispassion, I will do my best to get back to it as quickly as I can. Adolf Hitler was born dirt poor. Donald Trump was not. Hitler grew to power in a nation that had been beaten and left for dead after the First World War. Trump rose to power in a nation that was, if not left for dead, certainly, one could argue, not in great shape and had been embroiled in decades of polarizing rhetoric from all sides. Economically, though, we were in relatively good shape. This is me in the present day. When I say that we were in relatively good shape economically, I mean by standard measures of unemployment, GDP, etc. Obviously, any country where millions are scraping by, living paycheck to paycheck, and finding themselves having to beg online for help from strangers to pay their hospital bills, or for help when their houses burn down after insurance companies quietly canceled their fire insurance, isn't a paragon of financial well-being. By many real-life measures, we have been in terrible economic shape for decades. Right now, in particular, the U.S. job market is in a rough state of affairs. 2025 was the poorest year for job creation since the famously ill-fated 2020. And the poorest year for jobs before that? Why, of course, it was 2009, the year of the global financial crisis. Trump's first year back is keeping dismal company, and no one is feeling it more than the working class. Hitler served in the German military during World War I. He knew what war was, having served at least a portion of his time as a dispatch runner on the Western Front in France and Belgium. Trump has famously never fought in battle. He graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 1968, literally while U.S. troops were in the thick of the Vietnam War. As such, he was of draft age, but he received 5 deferments, 4 for being in college and 1 for having bone spurs. In 2017, Trump talked of bombing the shit out of errant countries and not caring about collateral damage, which was maybe big talk for someone who had never served in the U.S. military, period. But it seems even more bombastic coming from a guy who referred to avoiding sexually transmitted diseases in the 80s and 90s as his own personal Vietnam. In 1993, Trump told notorious garbage bag Howard Stern, quote, "Dating is like being in Vietnam. You're the equivalent of a soldier going over to Vietnam," end quote. That, he said, made him feel like a, quote, "very brave soldier," end quote. Present day me again, the Trump administration has bombed Venezuela, Somalia, Iran, Yemen, Syria, Nigeria, and Iraq, and is threatening to invade Greenland. Of course, U.S. presidents bombing other countries is nothing new. Anyway. By 1933, the Deutschland had been suffering from economic instability for at least 4 years. Post the Wall Street crash of 1929 and the lingering effects of World War I. Industry fell apart, tens of thousands of businesses closed, wages had fallen almost 40%, and the number of unemployed skyrocketed. The German people needed something to change. Hitler knew this and used the country's economic troubles as a basis for sowing racist division and hate. This is a pretty common political tactic. When the economy is bad, racist rhetoric tends to increase. In 2015, the U.S. economy rose to $18.2 billion, the best such growth since 2005. Nevertheless, Trump called us a ruined nation. 2015 was the year that the Supreme Court ruled that the Constitution guarantees the rights of same-sex couples to marry, despite that one woman in Kentucky who refused to issue a marriage certificate to 2 men who were just following the law of the land. The USA Freedom Act also passed in 2015. That act restricts government surveillance. That's a good thing, even if you're not doing anything wrong. Things were fine here. America was great. I mean, look, America was not great. But, like, economically, things were not a complete dumpster fire yet. Strangers, I am deep in the winter doldrums, which means when it comes time for dinner, the last thing I want to do is cook. Tavala is making dinner time so easy with really delicious meals that cook in less than half an hour and require almost no prep and practically no cleanup. It's like having chef-quality meals delivered right to my door. The meals are cooked perfectly every time. My kid is obsessed with the crispy chicken pot stickers with sweet soy noodles, and today I had the Green Goddess salad with chicken breast, which was a perfect late afternoon lunch. With most meals, you can choose your protein so you can swap out chicken or shrimp or salmon or pork. Tavala uses real, fresh ingredients. There are high protein options, calorie smart options, gluten-free options, comfort food, whatever you're into. And the Tavala Smart Oven isn't just for Tavala meals. You can cook pretty much everything in there. It bakes, steams, toasts, broils, and you can even use the oven to scan store-bought groceries like Eggo waffles, Pillsbury cinnamon rolls, and Amy's frozen meals, just to name a few. And it knows how to cook them, too. I love my Tavala Smart Oven. I truly cannot recommend it enough. For a limited time, because you're a Strange and Unexplained listener, you can get a Tavala Smart Oven for just $49, plus free shipping, when you order meals 6-plus times. Just go to tavala.com/strange and use my code STRANGE. That's a $49 Tavala Smart Oven when you head to tavala.com/strange and use promo code STRANGE. One last time, that's TOVALA.com, and make sure you use my promo code STRANGE. Remember, with Tavala, dinner is taken care of. So the early 20th century and the early 21st century were vastly different times, and these two men had vastly different upbringings, which offered vastly different opportunities, and yet somehow they both grew up to be, well, demagogues. I looked up that word to make sure I wasn't overstating. A demagogue, according to the Oxford Dictionary, is, quote, a political leader who seeks support by appealing to the desires and prejudices of ordinary people rather than by using rational argument, end quote. Hitler was not the first to use this tactic. History is littered with despotic leaders who sowed fear and division as a way to gain and maintain power. I love history. It's like Light 101 FM. It just keeps playing the same songs over and over and over. Back in 2016, Enrique Peña Nieto, president of Mexico, told Mexico City's Excelsior newspaper, quote, there have been episodes in human history, unfortunately, where these expressions of this strident rhetoric have only led to very ominous situations in the history of humanity. That's how Mussolini got in. That's how Hitler got in. They took advantage of a situation, a problem, perhaps, that humanity was going through at the time after an economic crisis, end quote. Trump did not take the hint. Honestly, he probably didn't even realize the statement was likely about him. In 2023, Robert Jones, founder of the Public Religion Research Institute, said, quote, Trump has clearly crossed into the domain of Nazi ideology openly, end quote. That's not a phrase you toss around casually. Well, I mean, lots of people toss it around casually, but I'd argue you shouldn't. It's a word that should evoke the brutal deaths of millions of people. But the word, of course, didn't start out carrying such weight. The Nazi Party was formed in 1920, and in the early years of its existence, it was mentioned alongside other political parties with no hint of the baggage it would eventually carry. Like in a 1925 article I found headlined, Nazis Impatient. It was just a throwaway story about members of the Nazi Party being annoyed by the removal of French warships at Martinique. I don't know the ins and outs of that stuff, but the point is, Nazi was just a political party. Like, for instance, the failed Tea Party of the mid-aughts. It certainly didn't mean then what it means now. That's not to say Nazis weren't awful from the start. Hitler referred to Jews as, quote, race tuberculosis of the peoples, end quote, and said that the, quote, ultimate goal must definitely be the removal of the Jews altogether, end quote, on September 16, 1919, according to the Holocaust Encyclopedia. But a lot of people just didn't take those words all that seriously. Not at first. Or in the middle, frankly. On Veterans Day 2023, former President Trump called his political opponents in Congress vermin and suggested they pose a larger threat to this country than Russia, China, or North Korea. I want to repeat that. Trump called people serving in the United States Congress a larger threat than Kim Jong-un. Listen, say what you will about the state of American democracy, and I have plenty to say about it. For example, I think much of the time the call is coming from inside the House, as it were, but this is next level. Then Trump moved on to the other vermin he wanted to eliminate. Here's an actual quote from Trump from November 13, 2023. Quote, "We pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country that lie and steal and cheat on elections," end quote. As the Washington Post noted in an editorial on November 23, 2023, his message of vengeance and grievance and the use of the term vermin draw very sharp parallels to the language of the Führer. An historian at New York University explained that vermin was a favorite word of both Hitler and Mussolini, used with the intent of inciting violence. In 1933, after an arson attack at the German Reichstag, Hitler declared, quote, "This is a God-given signal. If this fire, as I believe, is the work of communists, then we must crush out this murderous pest with an iron fist," end quote. And in 1942, he said, quote, "When I send the flower of German youth into the steel hail of the next war without feeling the slightest regret over the precious German blood that is being spilled, should I not also have the right to eliminate millions of an inferior race that multiplies like vermin?" End quote. No, he definitely should not have that right. Nor did he have that right. But he did it anyway, didn't he? Speaking after Trump's vermin comments in November 2023, Timothy Naftali, a senior research scholar at Columbia University, said, quote, "The language is the language that dictators use to instill fear. When you dehumanize an opponent, you strip them of their constitutional rights to participate securely in a democracy because you are saying they're not human. That's what dictators do," end quote. This vermin talk is tied directly to the other phrase that Mr. Trump tends to use frequently when referring to immigrants and others he finds repugnant. They are, he insists, quote, "poisoning the blood of our country," end quote. He usually adds, quote, "and we are going to have to get them out," end quote. Present day me again, another update for you to put in your pipe and smoke. In a December 2025 cabinet meeting, Trump compared Somali immigrants to garbage ahead of his recent deployment of over 3,000 federal agents to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And of course, as damaging as words are, Trump wants to add some action. That is, he has repeatedly explained his wishes to investigate and prosecute the vermin when he is returned to the head office. Trump has also said he would employ the United States military to put down civil demonstrations. Hitler had a group who did that too. They were called the Sturmabteilung, pardon my German, colloquially known as the Brown Shirts, a paramilitary wing of the Nazi Party whose main purpose was to disrupt the meetings of opposing parties and intimidate the Romani people, trade unionists, and Jews. Members of a group like the Brown Shirts might, for instance, hypothetically, say, surround an opposing candidate's campaign bus and caravan on their way to campaign stops in Texas, and use intimidation tactics and lightly veiled threats, and maybe even cause an accident, thus terrifying the people in the opposing candidate's caravan so much so that, for example, hypothetically, say, they might cancel their scheduled campaign stops in Texas. For example, hypothetically say. Strangely, some people seem to like despots and their tyrannical outbursts. I mean, let's face it, both Hitler and Trump are/were shouters, though I'd give Hitler the edge on shoutiness. Their power seems to grow the more flagrantly improper they are. Both men's bombast, though, their flamboyance and volume, are seen by some as substitutes for real policy, though Lord knows Hitler had policies. Psychoanalyst Walter Langer, who famously prepared a detailed psychological analysis of Hitler in 1943, said this about Hitler's oration, quote, "On the whole, his speeches were sinfully long, badly structured, and very repetitious," end quote. However, he added, the majority of his listeners were ready to believe almost anything good about him because they wanted to believe it, end quote. Conviction seemed to matter more than truth. Can the same be said for Trump and his listeners? Well, let's look at his recent debate performance, during which he said that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, were stealing their neighbors' pets and eating them. He said, and I quote, "In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there," end quote. That's not true. The city manager of Springfield, the same guy who brought some overcrowding issues into the spotlight via a letter to a couple of senators, said no. The immigrants are stretching city services, but they are not eating pets. Not only that, but they're not causing measurable crime, period. All that's happening is the town's more populated than it was ready to be. And Trump was fact-checked live, but that didn't matter to people who wanted to believe him. He said Haitians were eating dogs and cats, and he said it with conviction. And now it doesn't seem to matter how many people debunk it. So it's no surprise, probably, that both men share a tendency to admire so-called strongmen. Hitler, for example, loved Mussolini, at least at first. Their alliance was strained toward the end, but initially Hitler looked up to the Italian dictator whose lower third chyron would read, "Founder of fascism." Now, chances are you know all about Trump's tendencies to praise dictators and strongmen already. Think the love letters between him and Kim Jong-un, North Korea's supreme burrito. Not to mention Hannibal Lecter and the, quote, "very fine people" behind the attacks on a protest in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017. But let's go back further to Trump's stance on the student-led protest in Tiananmen Square in 1989. A quick refresher, the students' grievances included inflation and corruption within the Chinese Communist Party. Their goals? More government accountability, freedom of the press, constitutional due process, and freedom of speech. The Chinese government moved to shut the protests down on May 20, 1989, ultimately bringing about the deaths of between several hundred and several thousand. Thousands more were injured. And while the Beijing University students who staged the demonstrations were largely celebrated around the world as fearless in their quest to open China to reform, and almost every Western nation referred to what happened as a massacre, Trump took the side of the Chinese government. Trump told Playboy magazine in 1990, quote, "When the students poured into Tiananmen Square, the Chinese government almost blew it. Then they were vicious. They were horrible. They put it down with strength. That shows you the power of strength," end quote. Strangers, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. IQBar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel you need to win your day. The Ultimate Sampler Pack is a great way to try all IQBar products and flavors. You get 9 IQ bars, 8 IQ Mix sticks, and 4 IQ Joe sticks. All IQ Bar products are clean, label certified, and entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial ingredients. All IQ Bar products are packed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit, like magnesium, lion's mane, and more. I like to carry a couple IQ Bars, plant protein bars, with me. They're the smarter snack choice with plenty of plant protein, tons of fiber, and no added sugar. My favorites right now are the salted caramel chip, the chocolate mint chip, and, of course, the toasted coconut chip. The best! Or if you're looking for a great coffee alternative, there's IQ Joe, a mushroom coffee designed for mental clarity and packed with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine. Plus, it comes in four different flavors that are better than any brewed coffee. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text STRANGE to 64000. Text STRANGE to 64000. That's STRANGE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Matthew McWilliams, author of On Fascism, 12 Lessons from American History, has shown that belief in authoritarian ideas is the greatest predictor of Trump support. In other words, his supporters, when faced with stuff they don't like, imagine this one guy can fix everything. Trump and Hitler both believed they are the only ones who could make their nations great again. In 2016, Trump told a gathering of oil executives, quote, "I will give you everything. I will give you what you've been looking for 50 years. I'm the only one," end quote. Me again. Trump apparently did not consult with Congress as he was supposed to do before kidnapping Venezuelan President Maduro, but instead apparently tipped off top oil executives. Peter Ross Range, author of 1924, The Year That Made Hitler, writes that, quote, "No resemblance has been stronger than Trump's claim that he alone could rescue America from its misery. Hitler famously conjured the model of the genius, the great man, who alone held the key to the country's destiny. Hitler was building the case for the Führer principle, a belief in the iron infallibility of the leader," end quote. Michael D'Antonio, Trump biographer and author of Never Enough, Donald Trump and the Pursuit of Success, wrote in 2015 that Trump saw himself as a prize racehorse, the result of generations of breeding between the best of the best. Quote, "The racehorse theory of human development explains Trump's belief in his suitability for political leadership, despite the fact that he has never held office. He's absolutely convinced that America's problems will be solved by his God-given management skills, bankruptcies notwithstanding. You are either born with superior qualities, the right DNA, or you are not," end quote. So you mean like a master race, kinda, sorta, for example, hypothetically say. Hitler was more curious than Trump, as biographers have tracked his study of history and of the origins of the Aryan race, of his dabbling in occultism and tinkering with esoteric philosophies. The end result was the same. He maintained God had created the Aryan race to be the highest order, the most perfect of men, physically, spiritually, morally. Which is a weird concept, if you think about it. Why bother creating anything other than the most perfect race? Like, a baker isn't going to intentionally make 12 okay cakes and one perfect cake. Just make them all perfect. Anyway, Hitler convinced many he was the man to lead Germany, and then, I suppose, all Aryan people, out of the racially confused miasma that had lowered them to be mere mortals. For both men, the way out is/was radical and punitive. I don't think I have to fill you in on how Hitler did that. At least, I sincerely hope I don't. But let's dive a little deeper into how Trump defines radical and punitive. We'll start small with his response to an incident at a March 2016 Trump rally in Warren, Michigan, when a protester was being escorted out of the hall. Trump shouted, quote, "Get him out of here," end quote, later adding, quote, "I'd like to punch him in the face, I tell ya," end quote. Even later, he told a reporter that, quote, "Maybe he should have been roughed up because it was absolutely disgusting what he was doing," end quote. The protester was exercising his First Amendment right to speak, just to clarify there. Trump has suggested his treatment of others would be worse, more radical, more punitive. There's a story Trump likes to tell about General John Blackjack Pershing, an American general working in the Philippines at the turn of the 20th century, whom Trump said he was a great student of. While speaking to a South Carolina audience in February 2016, Trump recounted this anecdote about Pershing, who he said, quote, "caught 50 terrorists who did tremendous damage and killed many people, and he took the 50 terrorists, and he took 50 men, and he dipped 50 bullets in pig's blood." You heard that, right? He took 50 bullets and he dipped them in pig's blood. "And he and his men load his rifles, and he lined up the 50 people, and they shot 49 of those people. And the 50th person, he said, 'You go back to your people and you tell them what happened.' And for 25 years, there wasn't a problem," end quote. The moral of the story? Trump made that clear, quote, "So we better start getting tough, and we better start getting vigilant, and we better start using our heads, or we're not going to have a country, folks. We're not going to have a country," end quote. He then repeated the story again in 2017, tweeting out, quote, "Study what General Pershing of the United States did to terrorists when caught. There was no more radical Islamic terror for 35 years, end quote. Problem is, historians agree there's no evidence that this ever happened. In fact, they all argue that Pershing, who studied the Quran, de-escalated tensions between the Moro tribe, who were followers of Islam, and those who were fighting for independence from the U.S. I'm not going to whitewash the violence there, nor am I going to discuss the moral rectitude of Pershing. I'm just saying that's not how this general dealt with terrorists. The fact is, the kind of action Trump described would more than likely amp up hostilities to a fever pitch. My point is that some people think the kind of brutality he aspired to at his South Carolina rally and ascribed falsely to Pershing is praiseworthy. Some think the response to problems that plague humanity are simple. According to Jonathan Haidt, Cooley Professor of Ethical Leadership at NYU, who studies the psychology of politics, some people believe the answer to moral threat is, quote, "lock down the borders, kick out those who are different, and punish those who are morally deviant," end quote. Excuse me? I need a moment. During Hitler's time, that was the Jews, the Romani people, the queers, and the communists, to name a few. Like Trump, it seems it was whoever pissed him off that day. A list of those Trump has found morally deficient per his tweets: the press, the Centers for Disease Control, Broadway actors, the Wall Street Journal, the Department of Justice, the Supreme Court, the cities of Atlanta, Detroit, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, all of California, the National Basketball Association, the Pulitzer Prizes, the FBI, the European Union, Saturday Night Live, Taylor Swift, and of course, that nasty woman, Hillary Clinton. Of course, he's recently added a new woman to his list. Honestly, it'd be easier to list those he hasn't singled out for spite. I shall move on to the two men's affinity for plain old white nationalism. Let's start with Adolf. I'm going to quote Mein Kampf, his autobiographical political manifesto here, just so you know I'm not pulling this shit out of my ass. Quote, It is the sacred mission of the German people to assemble and preserve the most valuable racial elements and raise them to the dominant position, end quote. Quote, all who are not of a good race are chaff, end quote. Quote, Germans need to occupy themselves not merely with the breeding of dogs, horses, and cats, but also with care for the purity of their own blood, end quote. He added that, quote, must necessarily be a bloody process, end quote. Don't say no one knew. The book was published first in 1925. Okay, remember Steve Bannon, Trump's very first chief of staff in the White House? The former executive chairman of Breitbart News, which, by the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center called, quote, a favorite news source for neo-Nazis and white nationalists, end quote? Yeah, that guy? According to the Washington Post, a former colleague of Bannon's, quote, said that in their years working together, Mr. Bannon occasionally talked about the genetic superiority of some people and once mused about the desirability of limiting the vote to property owners. I said, that would exclude a lot of African Americans, Ms. Jones recalled. He said, maybe that's not such a bad thing, end quote. Or, as Hitler put it, quote, whenever Aryans have mingled their blood with that of an inferior race, the result has seen the downfall of the people who were the standard bearers of a higher culture, end quote. And sure, voting isn't the same thing as mingling blood, but let's be real. If he thought he could get away with coming right out and saying white people shouldn't mingle their blood with non-white people, you know he would. And while Bannon isn't Trump, Trump hired him. And don't forget, Trump hires only the best people. And also, excuse me, but if Steve Bannon represents genetic superiority, I'll take one of the just okay cakes. Thank you. As Bannon left his Breitbart post in another editor's hands to help with the Trump campaign, he purportedly said, quote, let the grassroots turn on the hate, because that's the only thing that will make them do their duty, end quote. Or, as Hitler put it in his memoir Mein Kampf, quote, your love makes me strong, your hate makes me unstoppable, end quote. Potato, potato. Strangers, my doctor has me on a serious rehydration kick. My kidneys are like, hey, dude, remember us? So I'm maximizing my hydration with Drip Drop. Between nonstop work, travel, and trying to stay active, sometimes water itself just isn't cutting it. I used to think electrolytes were just for athletes or super intense workouts, but Drip Drop has totally changed that. Drip Drop is doctor-developed, proven fast hydration that helps your body and mind work better, which is exactly what 2026 you needs. Think support for busy days, long workouts, and everything in between. Drip Drop uses science-based formulas for rapid hydration so you feel results fast while getting three times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks. Drip Drop is trusted by firefighters, medical professionals, and over 90% of top college and pro sports teams. It has zero sugar, plus a breakthrough formula with an advanced blend of 6 key electrolytes, 15 essential vitamins and nutrients, and no sugar or artificial sweeteners. There are 16 original flavors and 8 zero sugar plus options. I love the lemon lime and the watermelon. And my kidneys are thanking me. Right now, Drip Drop is offering podcast listeners 20% off your first order. Go to dripdrop.com and use promo code STRANGE. That's dripdrop.com, promo code STRANGE for 20% off. Stock up now at dripdrop.com and use promo code STRANGE.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In terms of whipping up hate, there is no community Trump likes to use more than immigrants. If he returns to power, he has new and bigger plans for those we refer to as unauthorized immigrants, but he refers to as illegals, on a good day. As per a September 2023 speech made in Iowa, Trump outlined his desires. He would like to ban anyone from a Muslim-majority country who admits to sympathizing with Hamas and, quote, Muslim extremists, from setting foot on American soil. He'd also like to say no to asylum seekers who may have come from or passed through a place where infectious diseases are prevalent, or who show symptoms of any kind of infectious disease. A small aside, asylum seekers are here because they have been deemed not safe at home. Trump has also expressed a desire to hunt down any unauthorized immigrant already living here to arrest and deport them. No need for due process. We can skip that step. And because this is such a whopper of a job, he says it'll be fine to reassign federal agents to the job of nabbing these fugitives. And if states want to pitch in local police officers and National Guard soldiers, in the inimitable words of Bruce Willis, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Me again, in the present. Pausing for a moment, I mentioned the lack of growth in the job market earlier per 2025. The one exception is ICE. After going on an all-out hiring spree this past year to fill the ranks of his anti-immigrant army, the agency more than doubled its number of agents and officers from 10,000 to 22,000. And that number continues to grow, with offers that some economically addled Americans just can't refuse, including a $50,000 signing bonus for a five-year commitment, alongside up to $60,000 in student loan forgiveness. And with the rush to hire has come a rush to train new recruits. Lots of numbers are floating around right now as to how many days ICE agents are actually trained under Trump's new mandate. The consensus, according to Poynter's digestion of headlines, quotes, and announcements, is that what used to be 5 months of training has now been slimmed down to approximately 8 weeks. That's 2 months of training for essentially a license to kill. Also, apparently a lot of new ICE agents haven't been paid anywhere near what they were promised, if they've been paid at all. Hitler had people for that kind of job, too. They were called the Gestapo. Here's what Stephen Miller, Trump's man on immigration, told the New York Times. Quote, "Any activists who doubt President Trump's resolve in the slightest are making a drastic error. Trump will unleash the vast arsenal of federal powers to implement the most spectacular migration crackdown," end quote. Never mind that such a crackdown, if successful, would upend everything in this country. Bloomberg reported in March 2024 that the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office calculated that those who work here without documentation generate $7 billion, with a B, to gross domestic product, not to mention the billions upon billions they pay in taxes. That is, of course, putting aside the human and emotional toll rounding up millions of people would take. Me again in the present. Deportations are nothing new. Obama deported millions of people during his tenure. Biden had hundreds of thousands deported. Trump's numbers are relatively low, although hard figures are a little hard to nail down. The difference, it seems to me, is the extrajudicial tactics being employed by this administration. The flagrant flouting of laws and the coverage from traditional media, online content creators, and citizen cell phone footage. One wonders why Trump is using these brazen tactics for what is turning out to be lower numbers than his predecessors. If his aim really is to get criminals off the street, he could easily follow Obama's playbook and be able to boast much higher numbers. And if you figure out a way to stay because, you know, you were born here but happen to be, say, Muslim, well, all he wants to do then is create a registry that you have to sign up for. Don't worry, it's just a registry. What can go wrong? Trump floated this registry idea in 2016, backed away a bit in 2017, and remained mum about the same in 2024. But again, in Iowa in 2023, he said he would deny entry to anyone and would actively work to deport anyone who does not believe in Israel's right to exist. Which, incidentally, I suppose, could even mean American Jews, who he said needed to, quote, get their act together, end quote, to show appreciation for Israel, quote, before it's too late, end quote. What does too late mean? Who knows what Trump ever means about anything? Even he frequently says he doesn't mean what he says. Thus, we would, in his words, add a strong ideological screening to our litany of immigration requirements and/or possibly to our citizenship requirements for American Jews. Of course, some of those who were born here will be welcome to stay, regardless of their racist rhetoric or literal treason. While most people see the attack on the Capitol building on January 6, 2021 as, well, an attack, Trump has managed to rebrand those involved as patriots. Hitler also led a failed attack on his own government. He was arrested and imprisoned for it. Oh yeah, there's another similarity. Both men were arrested after having served in their governments. And while Hitler actually served time and Trump has not, there's still time. Okay, now back to the othering of people, because that is actually one of the most dangerous tactics any politician can use. Just as Hitler in 1933 outlawed anyone who wasn't a Nazi from participating in the nation's justice system, Trump made sure his judicial appointments and his control of the Supreme Court are now so much more solid than they were the first time around. He will likely face little opposition on his way to cleansing the landscape. On the right-wing website The National Pulse, a post from last October quoted Trump as saying, quote, "Nobody has any idea where these people are coming from. And we know they come from prisons. We know they come from mental institutions and insane asylums. We know they're terrorists," end quote. Do we? No, we don't. By the way, those charged with fact-checking candidate statements at CNN can find no evidence that the above dumpage is occurring. In an April 29, 2023 story, the network explained that it had reached out to Stephen Chung, Trump's campaign spokesperson, for documentation. Chung could provide no proof, but he did reference the mass Cuban refugee immigration to the states in the 1980s. A pro-Trump super PAC didn't respond to a request for proof. Then CNN reached out to two national groups that advocate for reduced immigration. Again, they mentioned the Cuban migration, which did in fact see 125,000 Cubans making it to Florida over the span of 6 months. Of those, 2,700 were said to be criminals. Then the network reached out to three pro-immigration groups who couldn't find proof either. Then they put it before the public to find evidence of this happening. The request has been up for 19 months. Hitler's biggest lie, so I can stay on task here, Jeffrey Herf, University of Maryland professor of modern European history, says his big lie was the Nazis' depiction of Germany, quote, as an innocent, besieged nation striking back at international Jewry, which the Nazis blamed for starting World War I, end quote. This led to the further lie that the Jews were planning to exterminate Germans, which meant that all that came afterward was self-defense. See Mein Kampf, Chapter 10. The term big lie, by the way, is defined by Webster's as a gross distortion or misrepresentation of the truth, primarily used as a political propaganda technique, end quote. In the 21st century, according to Wikipedia, it has morphed into a generic term used to describe the attempts to overturn the result of the presidential election of 2020. Hank de Burgh, a professor of German at the University of Sheffield in the UK, wrote Trump and Hitler, a comparative study in lying, in which he says, quote, The idea behind the concept of the big lie is that if an untruth is sufficiently extreme, people are likely to accept it, if only because they cannot bring themselves to believe that anyone could lie in such an outrageous manner, end quote. He goes on, quote, it was Hitler who came up with the concept, writing in Mein Kampf that, quote, the great masses of the people more easily fall victim to a big lie than to a little one, since they themselves lie in the little things, but would be ashamed of lies that were too big. Such a falsehood would never enter their heads, and they will not be able to believe in the possibility of such monstrous effrontery and infamous misrepresentation of others, end quote. By the way, Mein Kampf, Hitler's prison memoir, Trump is a fan. There was a copy of it, as well as a collection of Hitler's speeches in a cabinet by Trump's bed, according to his ex-wife Ivana, who was married to him from 1977 to 1990, given to him by entertainment exec and Minnesota businessman Marty Davis. When asked if the allegation was true, Trump said it was, but it was okay because Davis, the man who gave it to him, is Jewish. He is not. Yikes, dude. By the way, Trump told Iowa supporters in 2023 that he had never read Mein Kampf. His first wife begged to differ. Speaking of lies, after Trump had been endorsed in February 2016 for his first presidential run by David Duke, Holocaust denier and former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, Trump pulled a Mariah Carey and told CNN's Jake Tapper he didn't know who that was. Duke, who would later credit Trump for the Charlottesville nationalist protest, famously said that voting against Trump was, quote, treason to your heritage, end quote. Didn't know who he was? Really? In 2000, Trump told the Today Show Matt Lauer he was not going to run for president that year on the Reform Party ticket, in part because of his dislike of David Duke and his politics. In his defense, at that time, Trump said Duke, quote, was a bigot, a racist, a problem, end quote. Pot, meat, kettle. Trump released a statement to the New York Times shortly thereafter that, quote, the Reform Party now includes a Klansman, Mr. Duke, a neo-Nazi, Pat Buchanan, and a communist, Ms. Fulaney. This is not company I wish to keep, end quote. Hey, as I get older, there's stuff I forget. A Klansman who wants to dance at your Reform Party party? And you go home because you don't like the intrusion? The guy who loves a good party? So much so that you went to a bunch of those thrown by your good friend Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile who lived next door in Palm Beach? Me again. Listen, I'm not even going to go into the Epstein files. Technically, this is just a comparison of Trump's rhetoric to Hitler's. I make no accusations here, just offering up a long-held Trump desire to know everyone who matters. Yeah, I don't think he'd forget either of those guys. Wow, I went off the rails there, pulling myself back in. When I was researching this episode, I wondered what Trump would have thought of the comparisons. So I did what I could to find out if anybody had ever brought it up to him. Come to find out, they had. On September 8, 2015, George Stephanopoulos of ABC News asked the Republican candidate for president his response to the comparisons to Hitler, as that morning the Philadelphia News had headlined a story about him, quote, the new Führer. The story that ran under the headline explained Trump's proposal to temporarily ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. Trump said he didn't mind the comparison, then went on to explain that Franklin Roosevelt had a, quote, solution for Germans, Italians, Japanese many years ago, end quote, during World War II. Quote, this was a president who was highly respected by all. If you look at what he was doing, it was far worse, end quote. He was, I'm assuming, referring to the truly heinous internment of 120,000 Americans of Japanese descent in so-called relocation centers or camps. Germans and Italian non-citizens were similarly rounded up. Similar, you might say, to how he said he wants to round up Muslims? I don't know. For example, hypothetically say? In 1988, a formal apology was issued by President Reagan for those actions, and financial reparations were granted to those who'd been mistreated. I would like to think that maybe Trump doesn't know his history very well, that he didn't mind the comparisons, that choosing Roosevelt's worst moment as evidence that what he was asking for wasn't that bad, that sharing any attribute with Hitler was somehow okay because he just doesn't know what the man did or stood for. Then I rethink. According to Jonathan Karl, author of Tired of Winning, Trump and the Grand Old Party, Trump bragged repeatedly to congressional leaders that German Chancellor Angela Merkel had remarked to him that she was amazed by the size of the crowds he drew. Quote, "She told me that there was only one other political leader who ever got crowds as big as mine," end quote. Not sure she meant it as a compliment, Donnie. And retired Marine Corps General John Kelly, who served as White House Chief of Staff under Trump, one of four during his one term in office, told CNN that Trump often praised Hitler in private. Kelly told Trump he could never say anything good about the German dictator. Trump replied, quote, "He rebuilt the economy," end quote. Kelly challenged that. He replied, "But what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world," end quote. Then, addressing the CNN reporter, Kelly added, quote, "It's pretty hard to believe he missed the Holocaust, though, and pretty hard to understand how he missed the 400,000 American GIs that were killed in the European theater," end quote. Does Trump really not have an appreciation for one of the world's greatest atrocities? Kelly thinks he does. In an excerpt from The Divider, Trump in the White House, by Peter Baker and Susan Glasser, the authors quote the retired general one more time. When Trump complained that America's military leaders weren't totally loyal to him, he was furious, shouting to a room full of high-ranking officers, quote, "You fucking generals, why can't you be like the German generals?" end quote.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
As we approach the November 5th election, more and more people are coming forward making this comparison, including on the day I recorded this episode when a former Holocaust educator pointed out that in a recent speech at a rally in Pennsylvania from a few days ago, Trump suggested that, quote, "one night of violence" would, quote, "teach them a lesson." Similar, perhaps, to Kristallnacht? And I don't have any more time to go into detail, so please look that up if you don't know what it is. The reality seems to be that this time, when people make this comparison, it is indeed not hyperbolic. The two men followed a very similar playbook. And if you find yourself wondering how the German people let Hitler come to power and commit unspeakable crimes against humanity, you can look at what's happening right now. Don't believe me? Or any of the other people who have compared Trump to Hitler? Fair enough, I'm a pesky SJW and those other people have turned their back on him. But what about his running mate? In the run-up to the 2016 Republican convention, J.D. Vance said Trump was an idiot, ridiculous, and he might be America's Hitler. He said that Trump was, and I'm quoting again, quote, "an authoritarian fascist who must be stopped at all costs," end quote. Trump is nothing new. We've seen his kind over and over. In fact, he's not the only one using incredibly dangerous terminology right now. On October 9, 2023, 3 days after the horrific attack on Israel by Hamas militants, Israel's Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said, quote, "We are imposing a complete siege on Gaza. There will be no electricity, no food, no water, no fuel. Everything will be closed. We are fighting human animals, and we act accordingly," end quote. And regardless of what you may think of Hamas, the vast majority of Gazans are not Hamas, and no person should be referred to as an animal, ever. Okay, it's me again in the present. I have to be honest, I didn't really think through how hard it would be to update this episode. So much more has happened in Trump's first year of his second term that it makes my head spin to think about it. None of it is surprising. Pretty much all of it was laid out in Project 2025. So people who are complaining that what's happening is not what they voted for clearly weren't paying attention. I guess the truly strange and unexplained of it all is the cognitive dissonance it has to take to continue to support this man and his administration. I wonder how those who took issue with this episode when it came out reconcile their ire at me with folks in Trump's administration openly using Nazi rhetoric. Like, as reported everywhere, but I'll quote The Atlantic, quote, "one homeland, one people, one heritage," which sounds eerily similar to the Nazi slogan "Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Führer," one people, one realm, one leader, end quote. Or former Trump employee Elon Musk doing a Nazi salute. Or the rally that Trump held at Madison Square Garden just weeks after this episode originally aired. According to NYU history professor Ruth Ben-Gayet in an interview for PBS NewsHour, quote, "So this took place in Madison Square Garden, and it was one of many occasions that the Trump campaign has chosen to allow comparisons to be made to the Nazis." So that was Madison Square Garden, which was the site of a rally by American Nazis in 1939, talking about polluting the blood, speaking of Americans as an enemy within. This is all straight from fascism. In fact, fascism, the core of fascism in Italy and Germany, were combatants who followed their leader to bring the war home and turned their force against their own people. And when Donald Trump was talking about America as an occupied country and he was going to liberate it, and also in the past talking about using the military on Americans, this comes out of fascism and also the tradition of military dictatorships like Pinochet in Chile. End quote. Or the administration's use of the quote, "which way, Greenland man," as per a piece in The Guardian, quote, "according to Heidi Beirich, a co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, who closely monitors American neo-Nazis, this was a clear-cut example of a nod towards racist far-right literature. This is a key concept in neo-Nazi and white supremacist subculture," said Beirich. "Western man is code for white man, and one of the most popular racist books in these subcultures is Which Way, Western Man, which has been featured in a Department of Homeland Security post celebrating Manifest Destiny. The 1978 book is essential reading among the American far right and was written by the late white nationalist William Gailey Simpson, a member of the National Alliance, a foundational neo-Nazi organization established by William Luther Pierce, whose writing inspired several acts of terrorism, including the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing," end quote. There are more instances of references to far-right, racist, white supremacist rhetoric coming from this administration, and they can deny it all they want, but, like, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, no offense to ducks. Look, I'm no political scientist, but you can find dozens of articles and papers from people who are political scientists arguing a lot of the same things I argued here. Through either study or experience, these are the sentiments of people closer to knowing the truth than me. Like, for example, General Mark Milley, who chaired the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the first Trump presidency, who told Bob Woodward for his book War, quote, "No one has ever been as dangerous to this country as Donald Trump. Now I realize he's a total fascist. He is the most dangerous person to this country," end quote. I would be remiss at the end of all of this if I didn't point out that many black and brown people in this country have been living inside this dystopic nightmare for centuries. They have been genocided, imprisoned at grossly disproportionate rates, occupied, brutalized, murdered by the state with little or no repercussions, and have been operating under seemingly different rules and laws than the majority of white people. Trump didn't need Hitler's playbook. He's following the one written by centuries of American presidents and policymakers who built this country on indigenous genocide and chattel slavery, then maintained it through Jim Crow, mass incarceration, and state-sanctioned violence. Trump isn't Hitler. Trump is Trump. I'm not sure what else to say here, folks. This one may cost me. I'm bound to make a few people pretty angry. But, you know, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. But also, if you're more mad at me than you are at this administration, you might want to renegotiate your priorities. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, the harrowing tale of the kidnapping and incredible survival of Barbara Jean Mackel. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment and Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by Amy Wilson and me, Daisy Egan, with research by Amy Wilson, me, and Becca DiGregorio. Editorial help from Becca DiGregorio. Original sound engineering by Henry Lavoy, with updates from Jeff Devine. Music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode or want to submit a question for an Ask Me Anything episode, head to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. I will write back. Eventually, I need an assistant. You can follow me on social media at Daisy Egan or follow the show at SNU Pod and Grab Bag Collab. Stay strange. Thank you.